Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
All right, good day. This is Josh with Orlando Entrepreneurs, and today we have on the show the CEO and founder of Threat Locker, Mr. Danny Jenkins. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Josh.
Yeah, man. So we're here in Orlando, Florida. We're in your headquarters, and we're having discussions about you as a founder and the businesses that you have built here and internationally. And what I'd like to do is really get from you and share your story with the entrepreneurs out there. But tell us a little bit about Threat Locker, and then we'll go back in time to how you started and sold other businesses.
Okay, thank you. So Threat Locker, we founded Threat Locker because there was a real problem with businesses not being able to control what runs in their environment. For an IT manager or someone who's in charge of IT security, this is a big, huge issue. And this could be you don't want people playing games on their work computers, right through to malware, unauthorized software, spyware running that isn't supposed to be running. We all saw last May, the world was brought to its knees by the WannaCry ransomware, which shut down hospitals in London where ambulances were being turned away from the door. And they also shut down financial institutions and banks over some guy in the Ukraine, or sponsored by North Korea apparently, sending some malware out. It's a big problem for businesses not being able to control what runs. Everybody runs an antivirus, but it doesn't work. It doesn't do the job. The only way for businesses to get control of their infrastructure is to choose exactly what is running and what isn't running.
Awesome. So you started building Threat Locker because you saw that the marketplace, the current malware and spyware and these things that are on these enterprise computers, you saw that they weren't doing a good job. So you started saying, I'll build it myself.
Yeah, so I think the way they were doing it was wrong. And, my background is corporate IT. Despite being a multiple-time entrepreneur that have sold multiple companies, I still consider myself to be an IT person. And it's a real frustration when you're fighting, trying to stop things that shouldn't be running. And traditional IT security antivirus software works on a blacklist basis. So the way that works is we know something's been bad, we know this file has a criminal record, for lack of a better word, therefore we're gonna block it. The problem is, the file isn't bad until it's done bad, until somebody's reported it or enough people have reported it, and then it shouldn't run. It's kind of like letting somebody in your house if they don't have, saying anybody can come in my house if they don't have a criminal record. We don't do that. We say you're only allowed in my house if you're invited in my house. And that's the way that computers should work. So 2 years ago when we started writing this product, we said, we have to think of the same approach on your computer that we do with our house, that software shouldn't run unless the business wants it to run. That way we're not trying to find the bad guys, we're just saying we're only letting in the good guys.
See, I like that. And so you mentioned that you have bought and sold, or built and sold multiple companies. Why don't you walk us through that, and then we could dive into more information about what you're doing now. But let's go backwards into how you began an entrepreneur yourself.
Okay, like I said, my background is corporate IT, and I sound really old when I say the number of years, but I started very young. In 2005, I was living in Ireland, working for a multinational company in their IT department. I was traveling around the world at 23 years old, building corporate infrastructure, firewalls, cybersecurity solutions, Active Directory servers, and I found myself not going anywhere more. I seemed to have reached my maximum potential and wasn't succeeding. So I wanted to change that, and I wanted to accelerate further. So I decided to build my own cloud-based email security solution. Now, in 2005, the cloud didn't even exist, so to speak. It was still called hosted servers. And when I tried to sell this solution, it was very difficult. We did succeed, but every time I went to a client, they'd say to me, that's too unsecure to put my email in the cloud. I said, but it's just your spam. And people still weren't even willing to put their spam in the cloud in 2005. Now, we did succeed in growing the business, and we did sign up thousands of clients, but it was hard work. We ran that business for 3 years. I exited after 3 years. And the company eventually sold on to J2 Software, which was eFax later on. After that, I set up another email security company. This time it was in 2009. We had a slightly different approach. My intention was with this one not to build products to sell from the cloud, but build technology for other cloud providers to put into their own infrastructure and sell from their cloud. We did ultimately end up selling from the cloud ourselves as well, because we had a demo environment and everybody just wanted to stay on it. But you know, I built that business again from 2009, end of 2009 through to 2015. Is that right? Sorry, yeah, 2015. And I then sold that onto SensorNet 2 years ago.
Nice. Now this was over across the pond, right? This was in another country. Was it in Ireland?
Yeah, so the first business I founded in Ireland, and I ran that in Ireland until I exited. The second business, we kind of founded in Ireland, but we very shortly relocated it to Florida in the United States.
Okay. Now, how did you choose Florida? You know, talk to us about your, you know, moving your business, moving your family over here and building a business here in Florida.
Florida, we looked at different options. Ireland wasn't really a very business enticing environment. The taxes are extremely high, not to mention the weather was extremely miserable. We wanted an environment that was more business productive. So we looked at different options, and one of those options was Malta. The UK was out the equation. In the end, we decided that the US in general is more business attractive than most of the European markets, and we settled on Florida because of the low taxes here and the workforce availability with things like universities. Central Florida is a great place. There's a lot of educated people here, and to be honest, they're not as expensive as they are in California or up in DC area. There's a lot of people graduating UCF who can't find local work and they have to move out of state. So we believe that Florida was a good location for that. It was a challenge to move over here. You can't sponsor yourself for a visa as a business. So we did apply for an extraordinary ability visa. So that was granted, a green card that was granted 2 years after we relocated here.
Nice. So you're here. You started building. You moved your business over here and built that. What became of that?
That was the second business that sold. That sold 2 years in 2015. We ran the business. Most of our business. I say most of it, I think 99.something% of our business was import, of which over half of it was from Asian markets and China markets. So we were bringing some of the money back this way for a little while. Yeah. And then we sold that business in 2015 to a UK company called SensorNet.
Ah, very good. So now you and your wife, you're both entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Right? Tell us about what kind of work is your wife doing?
So there's three of us that founded ThreatLocker. There's myself, my wife, and another partner, John Carlin. So my wife is a background is in IT. She has a local IT managed service company where she protects, she manages IT for some schools, some call centers, law firms, and things like that in the Orlando area. She does that. That's what she continues to do that, but she's also working on ThreatLocker.
Ah, very good. So ThreatLocker is the thing that has your focus now. You started building it 2 years ago and going through some, you know, really great programs, and as you are building and learning and growing and learning more about the opportunity, you guys are at the stage now where you're starting to bring on more and more clients. Talk to us about the kind of clients that you really enjoy working with.
We enjoy working with a lot of clients, especially the ones that pay. Yeah. The challenge is, I mean, my objective is to find the clients who have the most problems and to come up with a solution for them. And, you know, schools is a great example of this. We've got Orlando schools, Florida, some of the public schools have signed up for a trial recently, actually. They have obviously big challenges because of a lot of students who aren't necessarily the best behaviors, and even teachers aren't the best behaviors in the organization. So they're great because they have serious problems with people running software that shouldn't be able to run software. Retail is another area I love to work with because, again, they have a high turnover of staff and they have people downloading things, running things that shouldn't be running, and ultimately infecting them with viruses. But we're also looking to target more targeted organizations that are not necessarily just being affected by random malware, but targeted malware. So take, for instance, a DNC who ran malware that was custom written that wouldn't be picked up by any antivirus that sits on their computer for 6 months. So we'd like to see more organizations, hospitals, people that carry personal data running our software so they don't actually, you know, so when they do have targeted attacks against them, like Equifax, that can't be sitting there running in the background without them knowing, because with our solution, everything that runs has to be approved by your security or your IT department. In addition to that, everything is logged. So if something's running, you can see who opened it, where it came from, and when it was opened the first time.
Yeah, that's great. So you're building, you're growing, you're on your third business right now,
yes,
which is really exciting. I'm sure over the years of you building, you and your family, what kind of advice do you have for entrepreneurs out there as you're building and growing? Because you've been through early stage building, funding, you've been funded, selling, and then, you know, keep on going through this process. So, like, talk to us about some of the advice that you have for entrepreneurs out there who maybe have not yet gone through those things.
Well, the first piece of advice is the hardest. If you manage to get 8 hours sleep a night, there's 112 waking hours. You should probably be spending 106 of those working on your business. And it's hard work. And of the other six, probably four of them should be spent exercising just so you don't die of heart failure.
Yeah.
So, you know, so keep at it. Don't give up. You know, say goodbye to weekends, evenings for the first few years of the business, at least. You know, find a product that people, and build a product that people need. And make sure that you back it up with service. So if there is an issue, even if that customer is causing you more pain than they're worth, or you're paying more money to deliver it, you keep following through until you get it right and until the customer's happy, because you're not just, you know, building a product, you're not just solving their problem, but you're solving your product's problem. And if that is that your customer doesn't know how to use it, then the product needs to be easier. Or if it's that your customer has a third-party software or something that's interfering with it, make sure you find out why. So at least in the future, even if you lose that customer, and that you understand what the problem was, and you can make sure it doesn't happen to anybody else. Especially during the early stages, it's important to do that. You know, I think that's
pretty good. You said find out what people need. So a lot of times people are building something that they have in their mind or vision, and they think that it's a really great idea, and maybe their mom and grandmother told them it's a great idea. How can you validate what is needed in the marketplace? So as people are building stuff, what has been your experience on how to validate the need of the marketplace?
Well, first of all, don't ask people what they need, ask them what their problems are. And I love a quote from Henry Ford where he says, if I asked people what they wanted, what they needed, they would have said a faster horse. Find out what their biggest pain points are, where they spend their most resources and most time, and then try and reduce it. So in Henry Ford's case, he didn't say people's problem was they weren't getting there fast enough. So not that their horse wasn't fast enough. So if you can find out their problem and then find out talk to people, talk to businesses. It's actually a lot easier to call businesses and ask them to give them your time to say what their problems are than it is to try and sell them a product. And quite often you end up with them as leads at the end of the call, even though it was unintentional. So call businesses, interview people if you're selling consumer products, and find out, you know, what are they doing in their day? What's wrong? You know, what's wrong with the current solution? Or if there isn't a current solution, what's wrong with the status quo? You know, try and find out what their problem is, and then go off and try and find a solution. And if you believe you have a good product to begin with, and it's very easy to be tunnel vision on these things, go back and validate it. Talk to potential clients and say that, you know, don't tell them what your product is, because they'll say it's great. People like to think it, but see what their problems are, and then tell them, you know, could I solve it like this? Would you be happy? But don't go in and say, this is my product, do you think it's a good idea? Because people say yes.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it is your grandmother or your mother. But even strangers will say yes, because people don't genuinely like to be rude. But if you can come up with an idea, go and talk to them, validate their problems, and then pitch the product to them, or then tell them, you know, would this be a good solution? and listen to what they say.
Yeah. A lot of times I've seen entrepreneurs, they're just building in a silo. You know, they put their head down, they're spending that 112 hours, you know, working on their business or however many hours. And very rarely do entrepreneurs, and this is what I want to encourage more of us to do, is to get out there and have early conversations and then build to what they, you know, what their pain points are. How would you approach a business, right? Because I think that's a major anxiety that most people have, is the, you know, calling up someone that you haven't met before or walking into a door and having that conversation. How would you approach that for someone? Because you're a technology expert and, you know, you've spent a lot of time in front of a computer. You know, maybe you can speak to how to get out from behind the computer and in front of a customer.
Fake it until you make it. And I've been talking at events and pitching at events and talking to customers for a long time now, and I still don't like doing it. But just say what you've got to say, be comfortable, talk to them like real people. It's not, you know, we're not Apple, we're not coming out with something where we have to come up with a perfect message to begin with. Just go in and talk to people and, you know, sound confident, even if you're not. And keep doing it, and eventually it becomes second nature. And you find yourself pitching to the guy in the elevator just because you just, it rolls off your tongue.
Yeah, that's good. And that's good practice too, especially if you're going for funding, if you're going, you know, trying to gain, you know, partnership and even do higher level sales. It's good to have that practice. So if you could do that early on while you're building it, it'll make your product better and it'll make you better at you know, actually selling. Prior to us recording for the show, you were mentioning you spend a lot of time talking with you know, on the sales side of things as a founder, and you said it's very important for a founder, for a CEO, to be very involved in the sales process early on. Why do you think that is?
Because if you don't know firsthand what is coming back from the customers, you can't make sure your product is fitting their needs. And you know, when I founded my first business in 2005, for the first 6 months, I did all the demonstrations, all the support for the installs, and everything. And I remember the day that we eventually hired somebody, and it was a relief off my shoulders, but we went from an 80% conversion for web demo to a 30%. And there was two reasons for that. One is because the salesperson doesn't have the passion the founder and a CEO does. They don't have the passion in the product. And the other reason is because the customers can see if you're not completely comfortable with the product yourself, then why should they be? So I think at the beginning, it helps you get sales. It helps you get customers to actually move forward, because they trust you and you're the founder and you're the creator. So when you talk to them, they believe in that. But also it gives you feedback. So when they say, how do I do this? You don't have to say, damn, I never thought about that. But you sit there and you take that note, and then you walk out of that meeting and say, they raised a valid point that this isn't easy enough or this is too difficult to use. So you can go off and integrate that into your product. You'll never get that feedback from your salespeople. They'll just close the deal out and walk away if the customer's not happy. Whereas you can actually take their feedback, you can consider it, and you can decide whether you're going to build it into your product.
Man, that's really great input. That's really good. Thank you for sharing that.
I will add something to there as well.
Yeah, go for it.
And I'm guilty of this as well. Sales is, I believe, is a process, and it involves seven different ways of contact to get hold of somebody and to talk to somebody and to sell to them. If you don't have the mindset to do that, there is nothing wrong with bringing people in to help with the sales, but they should be helping, they should be managing it, and they shouldn't be, you know, they shouldn't be excluding you from it. You should still be in front of the customer, and you should still be talking to them. But there is nothing wrong with having a salesperson in a meeting with you, if nothing else, to make sure you actually do your jobs and you follow up when you're supposed to.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of founders, they try to outsource sales as quickly as possible. And you know, from what I'm hearing for you, it's really important in the early stages while you're building and while you're validating out, for the founder to be really focused in part of those conversations in the sales.
Yes.
Do you know of it? Are there any other like major things that you're thinking of? Advice that you could give to other entrepreneurs out there in terms of, you know, market validation, early sales, early product market fit. that come to mind?
So there's a lot of talking to customers. The best validation you're going to get is when someone actually writes you a check. Then you know that your product is actually worth something. So checks rule all. Make sure. There was 13.
Product market fit.
Yeah, product market fit. Make sure that you have there is a need and that your product actually fixes that need. And also that your product can't be easily replaced. Because I remember watching a Shark Tank episode actually where the guy he called himself a cybersecurity company. He had a cover for a camera on a laptop, and he wanted $100,000 to market it. And someone said, well, what's to stop somebody else coming along and just coming up with another camera product? So make sure that you have an edge, and it's not something that can just be replaced by somebody else the day after as well.
Man, I really appreciate you sharing that. So right now, if people want to learn more about you, Danny, or your business, how could people find you? How could they learn more about what you have to offer? Or even how could people buy from you?
Okay, so best way is to call us or to go on our website, submit a contact form. You can schedule a web demonstration of our product if you're interested in looking at it to buy it. On the website, there's an easy scheduler. You just put in your name, details, and pick a time, and you can schedule a demo at any point. Give us a call. Go to threatlocker.com, and we're happy to talk to you.
Cool. And I'll put all these links in the show notes, and that way you can go check out their product and watch them grow as a Orlando-based business that's on the verge of good growth and great success. So Danny, thanks for coming on the show today. I really appreciate having you. Do you have any closing things that you have for fellow entrepreneurs out there?
Yeah, just keep working at it.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, Danny, I hope you have a wonderful day. Ladies and gentlemen in the audience, fellow entrepreneurs, I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening into the Orlando Entrepreneurs Podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.